From Guidance in Shikantaza, The Absolute Practice of Get Sitting by Reb Anderson. Zazen does not prefer success over failure, or enlightenment over delusion. If we are enlightened, we sit still in the middle of enlightenment with no preference for it. If we are deluded, we sit still in the middle of delusion with no aversion to it. This is the Buddha's Zazen. Zazen practice is selfless. The goal of Zazen is the liberation of all living beings from suffering. But the goal is exactly the same as the practice. In realizing this goal, one becomes free of self-concern and personal gain. And becoming free of self-concern and personal gain actualizes the goal. Nevertheless, Zazen is an initiatory awareness. It opens the door to a full understanding of how self and other dependently co-produce one another. This is the samadhi of all Buddhas. Earlier today, a colleague at work, we've been friends for a pretty long time, and we had connected some years ago around the fact that we'd both been meditation practitioners. And we practice, you know, in different traditions, but, you know, there's a way that we're both learning to pay close attention. And so he came to check in with me. He had done one retreat a number of years ago, actually, but does not sit with a group and doesn't have that resource of people with whom to talk about his practice. So, you know, he's kind of alone in his practice, and it's easy when we practice alone to get into little patterns and kind of stuck places, and then go, try to fix them, fix the stuck places. And he was noticing this in himself. He was noticing that he's been doing breath work. And in doing the breath work, he suddenly had this realization that there was still a part of him that was really trying to control his breathing in some way. And, you know, in a bigger picture sense, that was really trying to control his experience. And he was wondering, did I happen to know a technique that might help with this? And there's something ironic in the question itself that I could see him become aware of in the moment he asked it. He realized that he was trying to gain control over his desire to have control. We had a kind of short conversation, quite lovely though, the two of us just exploring this issue in practice. How it is that we come to the cushion in hopes of creating particular types of experiences. Come with certain expectations around what the evening will look like. Tonight I'm going to go in and, you know, I'm going to be so serene, whatever our story may be. And if it doesn't happen, then the way that this can start to become a problem, we can start to think that this is a problem. Some years ago, 6 years ago, something like that, my life as I knew it, not entirely, but in some important ways, fell apart. I was divorced. My daughter got very, very sick and was hospitalized. My mother was hospitalized and died a short time later, followed by my best friend was killed, and it all happened in this pretty short period of time, within maybe a year or so. So I was on some level traumatized by it all, and was practicing with a kind of a submission practice. But that's not how it began. The way it began was me trying to gain control over whatever was arising, all the pain and sadness and grief and fear and all these really, really strong, strong, powerful emotions were coming up in me. And I felt a bit like I was a faker. Because I would go into the zendo and, you know, hold my dignified posture, but inside I was such a mess. Just in a kind of agony. And, you know, so I went to my teachers and would tell them, you know, before that I had probably, you know, 10 years of practice where it was, you know, just seeming like progress was being made, you know. I felt like I was getting more and more serene and spacious and, you know, like I was really progressing rapidly through the koan curriculum and, gosh, you know, I'm really a successful Zen practitioner here. And all of that idea of myself was shattered, completely shattered. Serenity was gone. I was just in turmoil, just suffering. And when I would tell my teachers about this, they said, of course you are. Of course. That is appropriate. My teacher, David Dayan Reinick, would say to me, you are doing being broken perfectly. Be the Buddha of brokenness. Now, in a way, at the time, I found this to be unhelpful. I thought that there was some technique, perhaps, that he could offer me, or some way that I was failing at this practice, that I was not doing it right because the serenity was gone. I must be doing this all wrong. And I would read this sutra, one of our chants here. Zazen does not prefer success over failure or enlightenment over delusion. And in the midst of this great pain, I thought, oh, yes, I do. that was not how I felt at the time. But what choice did I have? Just kept sitting with it. Just kept sitting with this pain, and it did not pass quickly. I just kept sitting with the sadness. Over time, I began to feel that this sadness was not just about me. That I was actually sad for all beings. That I was sad with all beings who suffer losses. I would hear about other people's losses and cry myself. So tenderized. My heart was breaking, but it was breaking open. I had to let myself fail completely at my practice. And I did. I did not willingly let myself fail. I talk about it like a great success. I mean, I was broken. And were it not for the encouragement of teachers and Sangha, I don't know. I couldn't have stayed with it, I don't think. Certainly not with the kind of tenacity we do at retreats and sesshin, and just continue to let this turmoil unfold without reactivity, without getting up and running and eating, five packages of Oreos or something. Here, just sitting with it, no distraction. Being carved out like the interior of a wood flute. Very painful. But that practice, those years of being with such intensity seem to have been very important for me. Because they have changed me. I no longer have this strong preference for enlightenment over delusion. Certainly not the enlightenment that I had construed in my mind, an enlightenment of a particular state of mind. What use is that when it falls apart? That's quite a fragile form of enlightenment. If it depends on causes and conditions, if it depends on a particular technique, and if it depends on my effort manifesting in a particular way, if it only points in one direction on the compass, what point is that? What good does that do? Because life doesn't roll out that way. Buddha came out from behind the wall when he realized there was suffering in the world. He didn't go back inside the wall. He went outside to face it. And the evening of his enlightenment was no joke. He sat and faced into terror and lust. He was a human being who was allowing himself to turn toward and face things exactly as they are. And he would just comment, "I see you, Tamara." To suffering. That's the practice. We don't necessarily have very much control over what arises in our lives, in our practice. We have some. We use what we can, of course. But there's a place, right? As the Serenity Prayer suggests, there's a place where control is no longer an option. Can we be okay with that too? If we are deluded, we sit still in the middle of delusion with no aversion to it. For me, this manifests as quite a simple question. What is? What's here now? Show me. So we sit, and up comes the movie screen of our minds and of our hearts, and the projection begins. And our breath is there, and our body is there, and the sounds of a clunky old church. The landscape is wide and revealing itself to us all the time. And in come the images of the past and future, and we don't need to worry about them. In come the feelings, positive, negative. The content actually doesn't matter very much. That's a kind of radical thing. To allow whatever's here to just be here. To even be curious about it. Oh, okay, so this is pain. Huh. What is it? To dare to remain curious about the things we think we need to be rid of. In learning to do that inside ourselves, of course, we learn to do this for all beings. Learning to be present with the suffering of the world and to bear it. And this is not just a practice of martyrdom. There really is a profound release, a profound quality of intimacy afforded to us by the nature of things in and of themselves. See, it's not something that depends on our creating it. I don't have to create impermanence. I don't have to chase away delusions. They just go on their own way without me doing a thing. They are empty. No point in resisting. Because really, it's all okay. Delusions are fine. We can let down our guard. We don't need to be perfect. We don't even need to be good at this. We can fail completely as practitioners. What a relief, huh? Just being here is enough. Just sitting still, paying attention. Free of self-concern and personal gain. And in this freedom, we see that we are manifesting the whole world. James Ford is the founding teacher, one of the founding teachers of Boundless Way Zen, and is retiring. I want to leave you with a quote out of his book, If You're Lucky, Your Heart Will Break, it's called. If you're lucky, your heart will break. Really, this is from him. Really, the deal is pretty simple. All one needs to do is just sit down, shut up, and pay attention. This is the universal solvent of the heart. Become as wide as the sky. Let the whole of what is play across the screen of the mind and heart. Just notice.